Hey, this is your favorite podcast host, Dr. Nick Sotelo, and this is episode 31, and I'm going to bring you Chad Zook. Chad is a fellow podcaster. His podcast is New Kind of Man. Chad has a deep heart for bringing solid masculinity to this world, and in this episode, he's going to cover what he calls the four pillars of true masculinity. So if you're a man and you want to know about what it means to be a true man, according to Chad Zook, then you'll want to stick around for this episode. What Chad brings us is really solid. Buckle in, let's go for a ride. Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the upgraded life. All right, I am here with Chad Zook. And Chad and I, like a lot of the people I have on this show, tend to have a ton of things in common, a lot of overlap. He has a project, he has a mission, and he is taking action. And part of that is he's a podcaster himself. And so I'm excited to have Chad here on this show. I know that the listeners, those of you that are tuned into this right now, are going to get a ton out of it because Chad knows what he's talking about. As a podcaster, he had some powerful people on his show already, and I have sifted through his web content, and I can tell you it's solid stuff. And so he has a heart for men. He is doing what he can to raise the bar on what it means to be a man, a father, and just masculinity in general. And I'm just excited to have you here, Chad.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Nick. Thank you so much for having me.
But Chad, tell me about I'm actually just curious about what made you want to start a podcast, and give us a little intro into that and how it's been going for you.
Yeah, it seemed to be whenever I started the podcast, I honestly just had a bunch of kind of prompting and prodding by other people and saying, hey, this is something you need to do and just kind of get into this space. And I did so pretty reluctantly, to be honest with you. I tend to be a perfectionist. So however good it is, it could be amazing, but it's still not as good as I want it to be. So I had to overcome some of the personal obstacles. But in doing so, you know, I found it incredibly insightful for me. And the people who, you know, who have said yes to be on the show has been great. You know, I thought that it was going to be honestly a lot harder than what it was to be able to have people on the show, good quality people on the show. But I found people are very generous with their time, and they have messages that, you know, that need to get out to the masses, which ultimately the reason why I got into the podcasting world, of course, it was because of the prodding and kind of people pushing me along. But my journey in helping men has been about 18 years, you know, it's about 18 years old right now. So it just seemed like the natural step for me, where other people had seen it even before I did.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So 18-year journey of helping men. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. In the early 2000s, I had I just got to the place where I really kind of found who I was as a man. Actually, that happened in the late 90s. I'm 45, and I was 21 years old and just kind of overwhelmed, and had some things happen in my childhood that really just kind of like I viewed all of my life through a lens of brokenness, and things really started to make sense for me and come together in the early 2000s, and then started to kind of do some self-discovery and just been insatiably like just interested in reading and kind of digging in and also getting involved in different groups. And I found that, that there's a hunger for it, not just with me, but other men. So it seems like that men have just kind of come out of the woodwork, whether it's individuals or in groups since then, about 18 years ago. And it was nothing that, you know, no website or anything like that. It was all at the local level at that point. But of course, this is before podcasting was even a thing, but one of the things I found is there's a lot of like-minded men who are also, you know, who have the right mindset for growth.
Awesome. What's your project called?
It's called, well, the podcast is called New Kind of Man. The website is called beanewman.com. And it's centered on four main pillars. And it's not just these four pillars, but one of the things I found is if a man will basically center a lot of his life around these four pillars, it allows marriage and relationships and raising kids and finances and business and leadership, all these other things, that it tends to go well. So they're actually rooted in a Bible verse. It's Luke 2:52. And the verse says, Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. So I break that down into four different pillars, that Jesus grew in wisdom. So there's an intellectual growth. He grew in stature. That's physical growth. He grew in favor with God. So that's spiritual growth or spiritual maturity. And then in favor with man. So that's like relational growth or relational maturity. So my work is centered in really on these four different pillars. And so these are the growth areas that, from what I see, it allows a man to be great. And a way that a man can be great is by living in service for others.
Awesome. So the pillars coming out of Luke, the physician. And so it makes the discernment of what those words are and all that a little bit more straightforward, given, you know, the demeanor of a physician writing, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They mean one of the challenges, they say what they mean.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the challenges that I really found just a couple of years ago when I started the Instagram, just the page, and try to get some of the message out, and just my own discovery and kind of how I've grown, and just kind of distilling some information out to help men. One of the things that I realized is there are so many characters of men. There's the, you know, the muscle and fitness guy. There's the intellectual book reading guy. There's the, you know, the emotional guy. There's all of these characters of men. There's the stoic man, you know, he's separated from his feelings and he can do all these things. And one of the things that I found is all of those are, they can be okay, but they're incomplete. So then I went and honestly, and at this point, Nick, I probably read, I don't know how many dozens of books on manhood, masculinity, and what it takes to be a man. And they were great and they were helpful, but yet they were a little bit incomplete. So then I went and then found that passage about Jesus. And I said, wow, okay, Jesus grew in these areas. And he was, in my estimation, in my faith, he was the perfect man. So he grew in these four areas, and they were, now when I go into the Gospels, I see that they are like, that his life is on full display, that he had a fully integrated heart, mind, body, soul, strength.
Awesome. So dial into some of those. I mean, let's just take a look at the four pillars, mm-hmm, to the extent that we can. So.
Yeah. So intellect, you know, intellect is one of the things that a lot of guys are, I would say that they don't have it because they're not disciplined for it, because men tend to have a hard time reading, for instance. I think audiobooks are a great kind of solution for that, because guys can put it on 1.5 speed and they get done faster. But yet I think it takes discipline. You know, it takes discipline. I love to read. I mean, you can see it behind me, but I've got a wall of books, and I've got more books at the house, and I'm not flouting the fact that I have books, but I like to read.
Yeah.
And I realize that some men are not disciplined enough to sit down and read. So, but you have to grow an intellect. YouTube's great. I mean, I go to YouTube and I try and get information through YouTube, and it's helpful, and podcasts are amazing, and books. I'm not really an audiobook person, but all of those are great sources of information to help us grow intellectually, but it takes discipline. We have to have that growth mindset to say, okay, there are things out there that I want to know about. You know, everything that's going on in the political world right now and everything that's going on in our country, we should be educated on these things. Yeah. And outside of just looking at whatever our favorite, you know, news app is, and then kind of saying, oh, well, that's the truth. We should become very well adversed in what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, and not that we were necessarily going to be the intellectual, you know, the you know, wearing like the twill sweater, smoking a cigar while sipping whiskey, you know, or whatever, like not necessarily being that guy, if you want to be that guy, be that guy. But just to be well-versed, and again, not to be a character of like, now I'm an intellectual, like you're posing, being yourself, but yet growing in that area.
Sure.
And I think that's the one that's the second most difficult. I think the relational piece is the most difficult, but the physical strength,
let's stay on the intellectual one for a little bit. So,
yeah.
What's your personal habit of reading? I mean, you said that you like to read and you're a reader, but what does that look like for you?
I always read 5 to 10% above whatever my current reading level is. So I'm currently reading I'm not a huge, I don't read fantasy or those kinds of things. That's just not my world. I realize that I could probably grow in some creativity if I did. That's just not my world.
Right.
So I really dig into self-help stuff. But I always try and read at a level that's 5 to 10% above what my knowledge base is.
Right.
So right now I'm also reading a book about Abraham Lincoln. I love reading about people who've made a difference historically, mm-hmm. and who have shaped culture, and looking at these men specifically, and looking at, okay, what made them the people that they were.
Right.
And then try to distill that into my everyday life.
Right. So I was one of those guys. I was one of those men who didn't value reading, and mm-hmm. definitely didn't have a discipline or habit of reading in my life. And that's despite having 3 college degrees. And so, you know, the way my brain works and the way I'm wired is I'm able to stack things on top of each other. So I'll just take Abraham Lincoln, for example. You know, the things that I heard about him through grade school are still with me. The things that I picked up with him, you know, about him in middle school are still with me in high school. So that when it came time for college and I was taking, you know, the advanced U.S. history course, I didn't really have to read much, you know what I mean? And so that's just how my brain works. And so I kind of got by, you know, I got by and did, you know, fairly okay, all things considered. And I really didn't have there were some things, graduate school and you know, in my doctoral program that obviously you couldn't avoid to not read, but I wasn't reading every day because I felt like it was a way of expanding or, you know, growing in wisdom, right? That wasn't something I was looking for or valued. Now you would say, like, if you were to catch me on the everyday street and say, hey, do you value growing in wisdom? I say, oh yeah, for sure. Right. But mm-hmm. reading wasn't part of that process. And so mm-hmm. what really tipped me over the edge for it was the book High Performance Habits by Brendan Burchard. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've come across that or not, Chad, but
not yet.
What he did is he interviewed and surveyed high performers in virtually many disciplines. It wasn't, you know, one segment of high performer. So athletes, musicians, you know, anybody that was considered a master in their field of study or discipline, and mm-hmm. just asked them, what do they do? And lo and behold, masters in their fields and disciplines have a discipline of reading daily. And I thought, okay. You know, and he had the hard numbers there. And so I consider myself a hard performer, and I'm trying to instill that into other people. And so when I'm done with this interview, I'm going to go to a group of people that report to me, and we're working through the book, High Performance Habits. And so, but it is that discipline. And what I tell people is, if you're not a reader, like I wasn't a reader, if you're not a reader, break it down like this: 5 pages in the morning, 5 pages at night. Do that consistently. If you were to do that over the course of a year, you know, you take in 20, 30 books, mm-hmm. right? And we're the average, like a heavy reader is something like 14 books a year. That's what's considered a heavy reader. In 2019, I took in 87 books.
Wow.
So, and that wasn't just paper. I will count audiobooks. Mm-hmm. I use my commute time to do that as well.
Yeah.
And I also, Darren Hardy, the Compound Effect, another book that I really loved. Mm-hmm. And he had this nugget in there that said that the average US commute time is about an hour, one way there and one way back. And that over the course of 3 to 5 years, if you were to just turn that commute time into learning time, then you would actually take in the same amount of lecture that somebody in a PhD program would.
Wow.
You know, and I was like, everybody has that choice, right? Yeah. People that are listening to this, you have that choice. You can get in your car, you can turn on your talk radio, you can turn on your podcast, or you can turn on the, you know, Top Hits 101, right? You can do that if you want, right? That's your choice. Or you could literally turn your commute into a doctoral program in terms of the knowledge that you could consume and take in. So,
yeah, what's really interesting is you're just kind of sharing your story, Nick, is I didn't grow up being a reader. So I don't want people to have some misconstrued ideas like he's been reading his whole life. I mean, I didn't read a single book in high school except Where the Red Fern Grows. That was the one book that I wanted to read. And I read that actually, that was in grade school. Yeah. And up through high school, I didn't read anything. I skated by. I'm ashamed of it, but I cheated to get by. It's like whatever it was, if I had to read something, I skimmed it. I didn't read it. Right. And I was a pretty good auditory learner.
Yep.
Or then if I talked about it, like afterward, it would be cemented. Like for me, reading was just not easy. And then after that, whenever I went into the military, I'd spent 4 years in the Navy. I started reading. And this is another clue, another thing about the intellectual space. Whenever I was in the Navy, I got interested in Nirvana. It was the 90s. It was a grunge scene. Like that was my world, right? So all of a sudden I wanted to read things and I wanted to know more about Nirvana. So there's a little clue too, and just a little help for somebody who's listening right now. And you're like, okay, I want to grow intellectually. Start with some low hanging fruit. Start with something you're interested in. What is something that you want to know about?
Yeah.
Like, so the discipline isn't, oh my goodness, now I need to start, you know, reading about astrophysics. If you don't care about astrophysics, leave it alone. You know, right. If it's whatever you're interested in, start with low hanging fruit,
yeah.
It, you know, and then create that desire and an appetite for learning and for reading. Cause that's honestly, that's what I did. I didn't really become a disciplined reader until early 2000.
Right.
It was after I got out of college. Now, since then I got my master's, and then that really kind of started. I had already been reading, but that really started. And I read all that stuff legit. So if any of my professors from Liberty University are listening right now, I did read what you told me to read. But in my bachelor's degree program, nope, did not. I just wasn't interested. I wasn't disciplined in it. So start with the low-hanging fruit and then go 5 to 10% above what you currently are. And man, and after a while, you'll pick up books. And as soon as you start reading something in this area, all of a sudden, something else will spark your interest. You get farther down the road. It's like, I want to read a book about that.
Yeah.
And then dig into it.
And reading as an activity is a skill, right? And so there are people who they'll say things like, well, I don't enjoy it. I'm not good at it. I don't remember what I read. And it's because you just haven't strengthened that part of your brain yet. And the only way you can strengthen reading is to read.
I love what Jim Quick talks a lot about reading and speed reading, and
right.
He breaks down a lot of the myths about it. And I'm not nearly well as versed as he is, but Jim Quick, if you look at his stuff and he has a podcast, his last name is K-W-I-K. He has some amazing things and just breaking down some of the stereotypes and misconceptions about reading specifically, and like little cheats on how to read faster. And he also talks about how reading faster actually helps you retain more. So a lot of times a person reads something and they'll read slow. And then all of a sudden your mind wanders and you're thinking about anything.
Right.
Instead, if you actually pick up the pace in your reading, and just as a little thing that Jim Quick talks about is you pick up the pace of your reading because then it demands your attention more. So as it demands your attention, and then it says also use your peripheral vision. So you don't have to basically go through and go page to the left to right all the time. Just kind of use your peripheral vision so you don't have to waste all of that sideways energy shifting your head back and forth reading. He has a lot of other things too, but
yeah. Yeah. And if folks haven't heard of Jim Quick, I recommend him as well. And his podcast is, you know, all about helping your brain. And if I remember right, he he's coming out of his own, you know, TBI recovery. And that was part of, you know, the quick brain. That's what it was all about. And so reading, you know, that what he has to offer is right on the money, because not only is it for helping people to read, but it's coming from his own, like, my brain's not working like it used to. Mm-hmm. How do I get out of this deficit there? So I recommend mm-hmm. that as well. So one last nugget, and then we'll move on to the next pillar. Thanks for letting me zero in on that.
Yeah.
And I throw this one around a lot. I have to go back and find the original source for it, but it goes something like this. You know, if whatever it is that you're trying to do in your life, or you're trying to gain wisdom in, and that can be a lot of things. It could be relational things. It could be how to start a podcast. It could be whatever it is. When you read 5 quality books in that thing, in that area, it puts you in the top 10% of knowledge about that thing. Okay, does that make sense? So you read 5 books on how to bake a cake, you are going to have the knowledge. You're going to be an expert in how to bake a cake in terms of the knowledge. Now, you got to execute on that, right? I'm not, mm-hmm. there's 2 different things. And the reason for that is, if it's a quality book, the points in the research and the data and all the application is going to stem from the same source. It's just somebody pulling from the source and kind of putting their specific spin on it. So that's why if you read 5 books in a single topic or discipline, it's going to raise your acumen, your level of expertness in that. So just want to throw that out there, that whatever you feel like, oh, I can't do that, I don't know enough about it, dig in, read 5 books in that area, and you're going to have the knowledge piece knocked out.
Yeah, I think that's a great little tip. And just 3 different books came to mind on it. It's not really, it is a similar topic, but it's the topic of habits. So I think Charles Duhigg wrote the book. I read it years ago, called The Power of Habit. Mm-hmm. You know, James Clear, I believe, wrote Atomic Habits. That was a huge, huge book. Great still book. Is a huge book.
Yeah.
And then also, so this is 2 different vantage points on the same topic, right? On habits. On what you do and all of this. And yet what I was thinking of, James K.A. Smith wrote a book. It's called, I believe it's called You Are What You Love. Mm-hmm. And which is really interesting because he's a philosopher and he comes from a Christian perspective. But what's really interesting is he talks about these things from a different perspective than what James Clear or Duhigg would. But he says something very similar. It's like we create habits around the things that we desire. So if you can change desire, you can change your habits. And also talks about, even when it comes to this in the intellectual space, really it's anything, whether we're talking about spiritual growth, whether we're talking about relational growth, or even in physical health, physical strength. It's like, if you can change your habits, you'll change your life. But if you have to change the desire, you have to go to the point of desire, because, you know, it's one of those, like, here's an example, Nick. So if my desire is I want to lose weight because summer is coming and I want to have, you know, a six pack abs, well, it's not really a strong enough desire because, you know, summer only lasts a couple months. So all of a sudden, what are you going to do? You're going to get shredded over the summer. You're going to want to take shortcuts, because to get shredded, you're going to do it not in a healthy way. You're going to try and do whatever you can to make yourself look good at the beach. But as soon as the beach weather is gone, as soon as you put on sweaters, you're going to balloon up again, and you're going to create a lifestyle that is unhealthy. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's like the point of the desire wasn't strong enough. Mm-hmm. And so instead, if you were to say, you know what, my desire is I want to be healthy and I want to look lean and I want to look fit. Well, really the desire then isn't displaced toward this certain time on the calendar that fits for 2 months. It's me. Mm-hmm. So now you answer the call every single day on the habits that you have. If you get up and you're like, I'm not going to work out today, you have to answer to you, because you've placed that desire. And every time you look in the mirror, if you're dissatisfied with what you see, you're the answer.
Right. Yeah. Love it. Love it. All right, my friend, let's jump to the second pillar. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Physical strength. Physical strength.
Good segue.
Yeah, for yeah. sure. Yeah. Completely unintended. That's the best kind, right? You know, the thing about physical strength is, and this is the one that most people know about, and I'm not an expert when it comes to this, So I've actually considered getting, you know, to be a fitness coach and that kind of thing. It's just not totally my thing. I work out all the time within A New Kind of Man on Instagram. I do occasionally post workouts of the day and those kinds of things. I do try and stay in tune with my body. I do consume water every morning before I drink coffee. I try and make the right choices. I run 3 days a week and I go to the gym on the other days. And I usually have one or two rest days and those are intentional. I mean, I'm 45, I'm not 25 and I want to make it, I want to have good functional fitness. So when it comes to physical strength, really it goes down to ultimately physical health. So many of the diseases that we have in this country, heart disease, diabetes, many instances of those can simply be cured by better diet and better exercise. So I want to see my great grandkids. My son recently got married and they're not talking about having kids right now. They're probably going to wait a couple of years, but I don't just want to see my grandkids. I want to see my great grandkids. Yeah. And I want to have enough energy in them so I'm not the crotchety old man that they're wheeling around. Right. I want to be the type of grandpa who's cool. I can go out in the yard and go out and play with them. And I realize the choices that I make and the food that I take in affect my long-term goal.
Right. Talk about desire and habits. There it is.
Yeah.
Right. What do you desire? You desire to see your great grandkids and
yes,
to be there in a meaningful, functional way. Right. Mm-hmm. So therefore physical fitness is a priority. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that.
There's this phrase and I actually heard it through Dallas Willard. He was a philosopher at USC, and since then he's passed away. He was an incredible guy, and his whole life and message was kind of like otherworldly, because it just seems like, you know, other than Yoda, does anybody really live like this? It was kind of like that, you know?
Right.
But one of the things that he talks about in his work, and I've read several of his books, and again, I just have an appetite for his books because it just so speaks into my life. But he talks about this, he talks about VIM, V-I-M, vision, intention, means. And he talks about not just goal setting. Of course, he comes through the lens of spiritual formation or spiritual growth. But this is also within your physical health, intellectual growth, relational growth, anything. He talks about vision, intention, means. And so I break it down to this point, the vision. What is it that you want to accomplish intellectually, physically, you know, relationally, spiritually? What do you want to accomplish? Set the vision. What is that preferred future? As one leadership guru said, what is that? What is that preferred future? If you were to set this space in the horizon that of what your life would look like in this area, in financially, within marriage, whatever, you know, business space, as an entrepreneur, what do you want to do? You want to create 10 businesses in the next 20 years? Okay, there's your vision. The next thing is intention. So what is your intention? This gets to the point of desire. Because if your intentions are off, and now I'll just say this on a personal basis, not on a business, in entrepreneurial space. Personally, if your desire is off, the whole thing is going to be, it's going to go sideways. You know, I, the image of the Leaning Tower of Pisa comes to mind. I had the opportunity of seeing the Leaning Tower of Pisa many years ago. And around my house, we call it the Leaning Tower of Letdown, because I thought it was going to be much bigger than what it was. And it's just not very big. And so there's another side story. I got chased out of the cathedral that's right next to it years ago when I was in the Navy. But I remember looking at the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and I'm thinking, all of this could have been prevented, right? The soil was like not right for the structure, and it gave way. And now they're trying to keep it from falling down by putting counterbalances on the other side. I want to help men do the same, right? I want to have the, like, what's a good foundation? The foundation for your vision, it should be with the right intentions. Something ultimately what I think is going to be better for you and better for others around you and ultimately better for the world. If it's not better for you, better for others, and better for the world, your intentions are off. Your intentions are off. If it's just about me, my intentions are off. That's just the way that I see it. It's going to land in the realm of narcissism. It's going to be prideful. And ultimately, it's going to lead me to a path of self-loathing, mm-hmm, which I don't want to be. So if my intentions are right, that I want to make the world a better place, and I think that this is, you know, I want to help men become great. And what it says in the truth that I cling to is when the question was asked of Jesus, you know, how can we become great? You know, a mom wanted her kids to sit on your right and left side. It's like, how can this happen? And his response was, well, serve others. That's how you're going to become great. So this is a, when I think of the four pillars, it's in essence to live great lives and to have great communities and great families and great marriages and ultimately great nations and perhaps to even change the world.
Awesome. When you were talking about that and we're kind of doing this, what book pops into my mind, like you were when I was talking a second ago, was Jordan Kemper's book, Red Key Revolution. Have you read that one?
No.
It's a great book. And it talks, his big thing is he talks about success that has to lead to legacy.
Yeah.
And that a lot of people, you know, strive and achieve personal success, but when they don't have legacy in mind, that's when things crash and burn. Right. So I loved when you were talking about vision and intention being about something that's better for you, better for others, and better for the world. To me, that's where I was making that connection between success and legacy. A lot of people and society kind of tricks us into doing this too, about doing things that are better for us and kind of forget everybody else, right? Just get yours, you know, and everything is going to be good. And so people that go that route, and then they're like, what was this all this about, right? What was this all for? And because they're still miserable, you know, and the grind got them some temporary things, but then what, right? And so starting with that, what's better for others in the world from square one in the first place will help you establish that legacy. So then you can say, this is what it was all for.
Oh, that's an excellent little bit there, because another thing, just kind of say the same thing in a different way that guys can connect with. Look at the people who are celebrated historically. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at somebody, we mentioned Abraham Lincoln. The reason why we know Abraham Lincoln is not because he just continued to be a lawyer in Springfield, Illinois, which is, I grew up actually in the small town in the shadow of Springfield, Illinois. He's like a, you know, he's a local legend. But the reason why we remember his name isn't because of that. It's because of the Emancipation Proclamation. It's because of what he did during the Civil War and how he led through that tumultuous time. He easily could have stayed in Springfield, Illinois, and just, or in New Salem, where he even lived originally when he moved to Illinois. And he could have been stuck in those areas and you'd never know his name. He could have made a lot of money, been a local lawyer, local celebrity, but yet the pathway that he chose was one of significance. And the reason why it was significant is because he led not for his own benefit, but for the benefit of the whole country, in essence, others. Yeah. And the same thing, you know, if you look at Martin Luther King Jr., it's the same thing, his whole life and message. And he gave his life for the message of racial equality. Look what we celebrate him, not because, you know, he just had this little house in Atlanta. It's because he marched in Birmingham and all throughout the South.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you look at, you know, Mother Teresa, that's another example. And the people who tend to be selfish are the people who they may make a lot of money, but ultimately I don't think history would remember them well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots of things in there, but we were talking about physical strength.
We were.
And as the kind of the second pillar. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that it's a trap in our society again, right? I mean, you know, Western society is all about keeping us comfortable, right? And helping us, you know, suppress, you know, the obvious things that are right in front of us. And then, like you said, therefore, you know, obesity and, you know, cardiac issues and diabetes, you know, are all of a sudden these plagues that are upon us. And they're because of our own doing, because don't work out, just be comfortable, right? Don't make your body hurt, just be comfortable. And it costs us quite a bit. And I'm going to throw another book out here, Spark by John Rady, where you were talking about how helping people with diet and exercise is kind of the antidote for those physical things. It's also the antidote for those mental things as well. We know now that the more that you move your body in a physically taxing way actually, you know, does things in the brain that you know, buffers us from things like depression and anxiety, and, you know, which is the vast majority of what we call mental health or mental illness. Mm-hmm. People seek help for things like depression and anxiety, right? And so that physical health part is holistically super important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, and because my pursuit is to help men to be fully integrated, it's the same thing. I'm going to skip a pillar for just a second, but even the relational space, you know, if you see a man who is, who's physically fit because of everything you said, and you know, the science, I'm positive, you know, the science better than I do with your, you know, academic background and experience, but it's with, you know, the dopamine and everything else, the oxytocin, everything that gets released in us, whenever you feel good and you look good, it makes you more relationally available to others. Depression, you know, if say you're unhealthy physically, you are going to be unhealthy relationally.
Yep.
One way or the other. I mean, it just, we're all connected. That's just the way that we are as people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then kind of linking back to your interview that you did with Redmond, the Navy SEAL, and, mm-hmm. you know, the battle wounds that he received, and the doctors told him the only reason why you survived this is because you were so physically fit, you know, and that just kind of put it right in front and center for me as well. And, you know, I've embarked on my own physical fitness journey. And a lot of that was at first was me stretching and growing myself. You know, you're talking about reading at the 5 or 10% above where you're at. For me, embarking on, you know, physical fitness journey was the same thing, because I want to be genuine and authentic when I'm working with people as a coach, when I am telling them to do things that are uncomfortable and that are stretching them. And so I figured I'll embark on this process for myself, so that way I could, just like you said, relationally, I could show up for them in a way that I wouldn't be able to had I not been, you know, biting off this piece. And it's been something that's kind of dogged me my whole life. Again, that piece of being able to rest on my natural athletic ability, right? And, you know, I can still get up and down the court in my current body and hang with most of the guys, but, you know, and so, but, you know, I live on some property that takes, you know, some regular upkeep with natural woods and whatnot. And this last couple weeks, weekends, when I've been out there working hard, it doesn't take near the toll on my body that it used to. And I was like, mm-hmm. I was kind of recognizing that recovery time. You see, you know, if I was doing, you know, limbing trees and, you know, taking care of fallen trees, it would knock me out for a couple of days afterwards, right? I'd get through it, right? I did it. But now it's like, it doesn't even faze me. So I'm so grateful for just that alone. It's paying
good
off.
For you.
Yeah.
You know, into the physical thing, just kind of bringing the vision, intention, means just in a real quick way, and we can go wherever you want to go. But what you're saying, Nick, I think kind of speaks into this. So if a guy has a vision to say, I want to be, you know, I want to live a long, fulfilling life, right? There's a vision, like that's my goal. So what's the intention? So now the vision is a long, fulfilling life. Your intention is to live a long, fulfilling life. It's not complicated. So then you can just choose the means to do so. So the means could be, you know what, I'm not a runner. I'm going to, you know, whenever they open up races again, maybe you're going to be in a 5K, you know, and say, I want to run a 5K. That's my goal. And maybe it's somebody who's just really, you know, physically, they're kind of lagging behind, to say, I want to do a walk run for a 5K. Mm-hmm. But you commit to the process and say, okay, the means is I'm signed up for this race. I'm going to do whatever training I can, but I'm not going to stop during the race.
Right.
So then you have agency, and agency is always a big part of everyday life. Like the ability for us to choose. We have a human will. We have to leverage, you know, with what we say we're going to do, we have to leverage agency and have it meet that so we can accomplish these goals. So I don't think it has to be all that complicated as far as vision, intention, means. Yeah. And the beauty is you get to choose the means. If somebody, they want to be a bodybuilder. I recently recorded with Paul Edwards, and he says he wanted to become an amateur bodybuilder. Well, like that's a whole other level of commitment than what I have. My goals are functional fitness. I want to be able to go out, and like you're talking, what you said, Nick, was a great example, limbing trees. I want to have functional fitness. I do run miles. I run 5K two or three times a week. But at the end of the day, I want to be able to go and do the tasks that I believe that a man should be able to do or has to do without getting winded.
Right.
And to be able to get up the next day and do it.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. And I'm assuming that this, you know, vision, intention, means is woven into the platform when you're working with people. Is that what you help them kind of do from kind of square one? Start with what's your vision and
yes,
what's the intention, and then how are you going to do that?
Yeah.
That's very similar when I'm working with people. And again, this is kind of funny where different words, but very, you know, similar paths and similar endpoints. So I talk about with folks that I'm working with mindset, mission, and movement, meaning that, you know, the upgraded life is about, you know, basically it's about your mindset, that if your mindset is off, then the rest of it really doesn't matter. Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, and mission is, okay, so where are we going? Right. And then movement is what do we do every single day that if we execute on that, we can't help but achieve our mission. But what keeps us going when it's tough is the mindset part of it. So that's the way I talk about it. Mindset, mission, and movement. I like the way you talk about it. Vision, intention, and means.
Yeah. I like yours better. So I'm probably just going to hijack that from now on. Oh, it's great. It's great and it's memorable, and virtually it is the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's cool.
Pillar number three.
Yep. So spiritual maturity. And for me, I am a Christian. I'm a pastor. That's my job. That's my vocation. I've been actually in full-time vocational ministry, paid ministry for 15 years. And now I'm a lead pastor. So a lot of people think, well, you just got this nailed. That just comes easy. And I want to tell you, it's just as hard for me to grow spiritually for me as it is for anyone else. So although I have to maybe dabble in some spiritual books, and many of the books that you see behind me, Nick, are those, and some other business and leadership books as well. But for me, it takes commitment for me to grow personally in spiritual, you know, in the spiritual realm. So some things that I do that nobody else sees is I go into my study at my house, and I'm typically up before anybody else is. So I go spend time in silence and solitude in the morning. That's how I start every day. I always have a Nalgene, either this one or another one. And I drink 8 ounces of water. Again, that's a physical fitness piece, before I have coffee. And I drink 8 ounces because overnight your body dehydrates. So I want my body to be kind of registering and ready to receive, and not thinking, oh, I'm thirsty, you know, I'm tired or whatever. So I engage, silence and solitude, and then I go through some intentional reading is what I do as far as growing in the spiritual space. And one of the things, I kind of go back and forth with this, and I really wish I was more disciplined in it, but I also have a couple different apps that I look at to whether trigger me in the middle of the day to kind of pause, you know, to reflect, or just kind of like sit and just literally, one is called Pause, 1 minute Pause from John Eldridge. And that app is pretty new. They have a 1 minute and also a 3 minute pause. And that's helpful for me too. But I also, and this may seem not connected to the spiritual, but it is for me. I'm somebody who struggles with anxiety, and yet I know how my body responds to the anxiety. But because I know that the anxiety is not just a physical response, it's also a spiritual response based off of a emotional, relational, physical stimulus, right? So I'll go through, and I know how my body responds to it. I get all the warning signs. I've gone to the ER thinking I was having a heart attack. It's not. It was anxiety. And so I know the pressure that I feel in my chest. So what I tend to do also by way of breathing, and this also is just kind of like some spiritual mantras that I go back and I go through when I struggle with anxiety. I use this as an opportunity to grow spiritually as well. I stop, I pause, I breathe, the box breathing. I don't know if it's the official way of doing box breathing, but 4 count in, I hold the breath for 4 seconds,
yeah,
and then I breathe out for 4 seconds. And I'll do this, honestly, for as much as it takes. And there's some things that I just say to myself personally in those and remind myself of who I am spiritually, but then also of really how my body's just responding to something that's going on. It's not always reality. My body just responds with anxiety of things. Sometimes they're just kind of conjured up in my mind. So while for the listener, they may not think that that's a spiritual connection, it is for me. And the remedy is not just the breathing. It's also the spiritual reminders that I have and the times that I've meditated on scripture. And then that reminds me of who God is and ultimately who I am.
Awesome. Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. The last pillar.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Relational integrity. Now, this one is the hardest one for guys. Clearly, it is. And I think that there's generational issues. I think that there's some even, you know, stuff way back in our ancestry as far as the hunter-gatherer, you know, how we've done all that. I think so much of this is become, and I'll use the word again, a character. So it's either a man is either a brute or he's a wimp. Mm-hmm. And I think that both of these are characters that are just simply just not helpful. There's a time for physical aggression, but it's not at home when I'm, you know, speaking tenderly to my wife. Mm-hmm. You know, I could tell you I've been married for 26 years and I would not have been married for 26 years if aggression was the way that I've responded to my wife through all these years. So one of the things that, again, paying attention to myself, And this is another one too, as far as maybe just help guys to grow relationally. And, you know, we get over our head really quick when it talks about relationships, because we think, well, we're not very good at it. We're really good at it. We're just not necessarily good with all the situations that life presents us. So if it's connecting with your wife, you know, you have to kind of go on a path of self-discovery. What intimidates you about having this relational intimacy? Because ultimately that's what it is. What's intimidating? Is the fact you don't know what to say? Okay, we'll do some self-discovery on communication. You know, is it because you go in the house and you see your wife's, the look on her face? Okay, study some of the nonverbals. You know, what's going on? You know, what is she telling you by not speaking, but just simply her posture?
Right.
Or is it because maybe we tend to, because guys typically try to do this and guys I've worked with and myself, we try and fix everything. It's like, and learn the value of not fixing, but just listening, you know? And sometimes I think guys just need permission to say, hey, you don't have to fix this one. If guys would really take this message to life and to practice, I think it'd be liberating, because I get overwhelmed when there's a situation that goes on and I feel like I have to fix it. I think if you know, for a guy, if they would say, you know, if they would simply ask this question, when you get in this relational space and you don't know what to do, if you would simply ask this question, perhaps of a girlfriend, your wife, what do you need from me? What do you need from me?
Right.
And now if you're talking to your wife, she's going to say, I just need you to listen. Hey, that's great. Man, you just listen. You just sit there and you're bought in and you're listening. Don't let your mind wander. Pay attention to what they're saying. You know, but if it's a friend or if it's a child or if it's a coworker or something, this is a message that needs to be resonating in your mind is, what do they need from me? Yeah. Yeah. What do they need from me?
I think it's Craig Groeschel that, you know, tells us in his book, From This Day Forward, to another spin on that question is, how can I be a blessing to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a big part of this too is integrity. And one of the ways that I look at it in the relational perspective, I just say integrity is this. And I think this should be the pursuit of every man. And this isn't, I can't give you five quick helps and you're done with what I'm about to say with integrity. I think that you have to do some self-discovery on integrity, but also this happens in the accompaniment of other men and also women. Integrity is the way that I define it in a relational term is this, being honest on the outside about what's going on the inside. Mm-hmm. And I think this can be intimidating for guys. It's sometimes intimidating for me because they're afraid of what they actually see. And yet if a guy has support and maybe he has a mentor or a father who's active, or maybe some brothers who he's doing life with, and just kind of like to kind of throw that, have the conversation around a campfire and say, hey, this happened the other day and this is what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Am I off from what's going on? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes guys just need permission to feel.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's solid right there, my friend. Yeah. I mean, I think that if people could wrap their mind around that in a real way, honestly, you know, anything that's written, anything that you could access in terms of self-help or counseling, that's it right there. Be honest about what's going on. You'd be honest on the outside about what's going on in the inside. Yep, for sure. And all of the things that keeps you from doing that, not just with yourself, but and not just one particular relationship, but in a variety of relationships, the work is all there, right? That's what it is. So
I'll just give like one little kind of tidbit with that, Nick. You know, many of the guys that I'm around or I've worked with throughout the years, it seems like the only emotion that they can grasp at any time is anger. Mm-hmm. Right. So if a guy's going to have integrity and he's going to be honest on the outside about what's going on the inside, what he would do is he would bring that question of anger. He would bring it to some brothers that he trusts in, or bring it to his own father, or bring it to a mentor. And he would say, hey, I don't know why, but the only thing I feel is anger. When my kid comes up to me and asks me, you know, to help him with homework, all I do is get angry. I don't know why, you know, or my wife, she just wants to sit down and talk. And I just find myself like getting anxious and I just get mad. I'm angry. I don't know why. You know, my boss comes up to me and he's giving me a performance review. And the first thing I want to do is punch him, but I don't know why. Like, I think if a guy would bring that question to his band of brothers, again, to a mentor or to his own father or a father figure, honestly, I think many of the problems in our world would be resolved as far as men, because I think men have so much built up anger and they have no idea what to do with it.
Sure. Yeah.
And if they were simply honest on the outside about what was going on the inside and find a place, you know, in a group of men that would give them space and grace, right? Give them space to kind of vent what's going on. And then also grace to say, brother, I've been there too. I get it. Mm-hmm. Like, here's what I'll do. This is what's worked for me. And then all of a sudden a guy has a support system to where now he has maybe a better place to display his anger or to vent his anger.
Yeah. Love it. And Chad, is it an accident that you actually have a space for guys to do just that?
With anger?
Yeah. Or just being honest about on the outside, what's going on the inside. You have a community for that, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, I, you know, I have a lot of people who come on Instagram and who also kind of share, and they'll DM this or ask questions and, hey, I saw this post, and because it is a place that guys are like reaching out for this help. And on Facebook, I have the New Man Crew. It's a private men's group. And I don't have as many discussions on there just yet. We're still kind of building the community, excuse me. And I think still trying to establish what the best value is going to be for that community. But that is my ultimate goal, is that men would have a place. But I would prefer to put that at the local level. Mm-hmm. I realize that, you know, I kind of have it's not huge, but a global reach, as you do, right? Through Instagram and podcast and listeners all over the world. But at the end of the day, I would really hope that guys would find more on the local level to say, hey, this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. Again, band of brothers, a mentor, somebody they can trust, a father figure, and then find that space and grace.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm part of an online mastermind where we do, you know, a lot of this work. And, you know, what I see happening quite a bit is in through the online community, I see us encouraging them to build those relationships in their local community as well. You need both. It's great if you can plug into an online community. I'm part of one, obviously, and I'm building my own for sure, just like you are. But I think it's both, right? I mean, go ahead.
Oh no, I'm in agreement, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to have those, you know, those people on your short list, so to speak, that if you need something, you know, in live right now, you need to be able to have those guys, you know, and then you're not going to be able to have, those people in your life if you're not intentionally building into those relationships in real time either, right? And so,
I'm reminded of a quote. I don't know who said it. I actually posted on Instagram months ago, but it says this: none of us are as smart as all of us.
Right. Yeah.
So it is that. It's at the local level, and then getting outside of the local level to people who have more mastery in those areas. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And oh, how I wish we were all masters in our own domain and we had all this locally, but I'm thankful that, you know, that we could reach out and have this conversation today, and the material that you put out on your podcast, helping men around the world, you know, to live the upgraded life and to improve themselves and the relationships and ultimately just the quality of life for them.
Absolutely. So Chad, getting to the end of the show, and just want to say thank you for coming on. How do people find you if they want to connect with you? If something that you said struck them, like, hey, I want to know more about Chad and what he has going on, how do they find you?
Yeah, they can find me the best on Instagram, and the handle is @anewkindofman. I'm active on there. I post once or twice a day. I check it regularly. So DM me. You know, you could follow it, or you could also DM me if you have a question. Also, the podcast, which is on the usual podcast players, all the usuals, at New Kind of Man Podcast. And then in the show notes, you'll see all the other ways to connect with me too. And you'll see the website, beanewman.com, and then the email and everything else. So if something here has sparked an interest, let's connect.
Awesome. Yep. And I'll be sure to make sure that those are in the show notes for sure.
Cool.
One final thing, and you kind of dropped it on us throughout this whole talk around what mindset is and what somebody can do, you know, as soon as this show is done, to start executing on upgrading their own life and, you know, vision, intention, and means. But one of the things, and hopefully that you can do this on the fly, because I definitely didn't prompt you with this, because I've been on this kick and I'm developing, you know, some formalness around helping men and people in general understand their anger better. And my metaphor is to take it from an inferno to a campfire. So that's something that folks can look forward to from me coming out in July in a formal way, in terms of a program and an opportunity to really kind of resolve anger once and for all. But you said it, right? I mean, and that's a predominant problem, especially among men, is they connect most frequently in with anger, and then it has all the fallout attached to it. So what could you offer to somebody who aligns with that? Kind of said, yep, that's me. You know, all these different things that happen. But for me, that it turns into anger, and then we're off to the races there. What would you offer them, to somebody who struggles with anger? What could they do to, you know, help that process of resolving it?
Yeah, I think integrity is there. I think they have to admit the fact that it's going on, and it has to get outside of them. So many guys like live in their own world, their own head. So I think that is the integrity. It starts there, of being honest on the outside about what's going on the inside. Okay, the problem can't be fixed if you can't admit the fact that there's a problem, right? So once you admit it, I think it does happen that this can be resolved. In amongst, you know, like I said earlier, brothers, you know, people around you, mentors, father figure. Mm-hmm. I think that's good. And also what I would say is, not only do you need all of that, I think that you also need to communicate to the people who are around you. If you struggle with this, mm-hmm. take it to the next level of those inside your home and say, hey, this is something I struggle with. And then maybe go through with your spouse or your girlfriend, or, you know, probably not kids if they're younger, because they're not going to have the mental bandwidth to do it, but to then develop strategies on how to handle it in that situation, and also to help the people in the family or in around the relationship know what the triggers are for that anger.
Right.
Well, you know, but I also think that there's physical health plays a big part of this, because men have aggression. This is one of the things I think that society is trying to, again, this is probably another podcast, but to feminize men. Yeah. And one of the things that I want to do is to validate masculine strength.
Absolutely.
And that masculine strength has a purpose. Mm-hmm. So while you may not be fighting off bad guys at your house, hopefully not, mm-hmm. or maybe you're not in the military to where you're on the front line, you know, attacking an enemy, for us, maybe we need to go out and we need to find other ways of working out that aggression, mm-hmm. i.e. that anger. And maybe it's taking a boxing class. Maybe it's jujitsu. Maybe it's just going to the gym. Maybe it's going for a run. Mm-hmm. And so I think all of these things would help to give more of a holistic approach on how a man should handle his anger.
Right. So what I heard there is you got to have a real-time relationship with somebody to help you through this.
Yes.
And then you got to have productive outlets.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you have to. And if a guy doesn't have both, if a person doesn't have both, then they're really lacking. Because if they don't have an outlet, it's still staying inside. And yet if they won't come to terms with it and identifying what it is, trust me, everybody else in their relational circles are feeling it.
Right.
They're feeling it.
Yeah.
But yet if the person themselves hasn't come to terms with that, saying, oh, it's a struggle that I have.
Yeah.
Then unfortunately they won't live in victory.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't have, if you don't have your anger resolved, it's going to impact your personal life, the actual relationship with yourself, right? Because when we act upon our anger, it triggers this guilt, shame kind of cycle loop that's hard to get out of. It's going to affect your personal life relationships with your kids, your spouses, your family members. Your work life is going to begin to suffer. It's something that is pervasive, and you have to get ahead of it. So I really appreciate what you had to offer there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really want to help guys too, because it reminds me of this verse is in the Bible several times, love your neighbor as yourself. And the thing is, people are going to, a guy is going to treat, somebody like he himself treats himself, right? So that's just kind of what that means. So if a guy treats himself like, a bag of trash relationally, treats himself within himself, that's why he's treating everybody else. And everybody else feels that. Mm-hmm. So I want to help guys to have a natural and a holistic way of handling the emotion of anger and other emotions to help them live in victory, so that they can truly know themselves, and they can also, and to the point of loving themselves. I realize it's, for guys, it's like loving myself. That sounds weird. It doesn't mean narcissism,
right?
But also we're trying to avoid self-loathing. Mm-hmm. So, because if you don't know yourself and you don't learn to love yourself, then you're going to basically try and band-aid your life with booze or pills or women or porn or whatever. Yeah. And all of that is not going to help you win as a man.
That's gold. We could keep doing this.
Yep.
Hours and hours and hours. Appreciate you, Chad, and all that you had to offer. I know that folks that tune into this are going to get something out of it. And so thank you for helping this way and making sure that what you have to offer is making yourself, others, and the world better, to use your language.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Wow, getting to spend a whole hour with Chad Zook and listening to the way that he approaches masculinity and the way that he approaches helping people, that was fun for me. And I hope it was fun for you. But even more so, I hope you got something from that. I hope that our conversation truly benefited you in some way. If that's the case, go over to Chad's podcast, A New Kind of Man, and let him know. Check out more episodes over there. Visit his website. Sign up for any of the free offers that he has. Chad is a genuine dude, and he's in this for the right reason. And I was honored and blessed to be able to spend the time that I did with him. And I look forward to spending even more time with him. As always, much love and appreciation to you for taking your time, taking time out of your day, out of your commute, out of wherever you carved it out to listen to me, listen to my guests, and to be inspired to upgrade your life. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. From the very, very, very bottom of my heart. My website is www.nicksotelo.com/TUL podcast, the Upgraded Life Podcast. While you're over at my website, don't forget to check out the three opportunity buttons at the very top. They are scheduling a time with me. I'll give you a free 30-minute strategy session. Checking out CBD products from Nature's Ultra. And then also, if you're looking to create an additional stream of income, I can help you out with that too. This takes 20 minutes of your time. Click on the button that says Income Boost. Give me your name and email, and I'll send you a presentation. Thank you again so much for listening to my show, the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm dedicated to this show because I've seen too many people live a life that just really wasn't about realizing and reaching their potential. So if you listen to this show and you were somehow, some way inspired to take action, let me know by going over to Apple Podcasts, leave me a 5-star review, and that will tell me that you enjoyed the show. This is Dr. Nick Sotelo, and I'm urging you to do something today to realize and reach your potential, and I'll catch you on the next show.